Good.
Okay, it's recording.
Incredible.
Okay, so you are a comedian. That's
hope so.
So our first question, this is gonna be a loaded question, so I apologize in advance if you hate me, but why did you choose to become a comedian?
Okay, great. I mean, really the long and short of it is I probably didn't get enough emotional validation as a child. I think the reason I really have always like been drawn to comedy, I've tried many, many things. I went to college and I studied journalism and I also studied Italian. And I thought for some reason that was a good combination. And most people would ask me, oh, you're trying to be an Italian journalist. And it's like, no, that job is for people who speak that language natively. So I don't know what I'm trying to do. And I really thought I was gonna use that experience and go to law school. And I could not make myself live that lie. I think it's a perfectly royal and valid profession for people who want to do that. But that was never my experience. But I've always been drawn to comedy because I think I've always been drawn to trying to understand people and trying to like understand myself. That is a lifelong adventure that turns out never ends. So buckle up. you're somehow never done learning about yourself. Can you believe? And so, yeah, I think like as a comedian, a lot of what I do is trying to like understand myself and how I relate to other people and how I often can see patterns in the world just from like living my life. And that is beautiful ammunition for writing and performing comedy. So I think why be a comedian? It's like, why not? Why not try to connect to people in ways that entertain them and only hurt me a little bit?
Quick follow-up. Are there like any specific examples of when you realized how much comedy really meant to you?
One of my most vivid memories of like when I started trying to like tell jokes or just like be funny was I think I was in the eighth grade and there was like a moment where we were going over vocabulary in like a social studies class or something. And I said basically a pun, which some people argue is the lowest form of comedy, and I will fight them because they're the most fun. I think you should groan when you hear a pun. That's the right response. And I like strive for that reaction. But I made a pun out of one of the words. Oh, it was emigrate. That was it. And I said something like, am I great or what? And all of the girls laughed and I was like, oh, interesting. Okay, I like this feeling. So not too dissimilar to, I'm sure, straight cis male comedians being like, it's a way to get girls to like you. I think that was not the driving force, but that was like the sharpest memory of like, oh, if you make people laugh, they pay attention to you. And sometimes you can focus where you want your attention from.
Eighth grade, huh?
Yeah, I mean, you got to start early. You know, when we're all just classically working on our tight five in between science and English.
For sure. So how does comedy tie into your identity as a queer woman?
A lot, it turns out. I think part of the reason I was drawn to comedy in the first place is because, I mean, I was raised in a very like conservative Italian-American home. My parents, I make the joke that I came out to my parents as queer and they came out to me as Republican. And I'm like, all right, well, only one's a choice. So I, you know, and It's okay. They were born Republican. Yeah. And then they sent me to Catholic school for like 10 years. And all of that is really transformative time and experiences. And I think because I was really uncomfortable in a lot of those environments as myself, the way to make myself comfortable was to find an outlet and like find a coping mechanism. And there's nothing more beautifully defensive than like making the joke first, because when I was young, it was like there was no bigger nightmare to me than somebody finding out I was gay. And I think that was a lot of like the fuel for the, all right, well, if I can beat you to the joke. And it turns out it really surprised a lot of people. I finally came out and I was like, oh man, I was stressing over this for way too long. Nobody's paying attention. And so I think that was like a lot of the experience early. And a lot of my work now is like very, what did I wish I had? What did I wish I could read? What did I wish I could watch? And I try to make that because I, again, a lot of comedy is connection and just sharing stories. And it's been years of just meeting people who have very similar experiences, or they're close enough to like figure out what the universal truths are of like, all right, we're all just doing the best we can on this big floating rock that may or may not be a simulation. So like, how do we understand each other? And so, yeah, it's just like trying to take my experiences as a queer person, just trying to live my life, and connecting it to people who may not even share those experiences, but it's like, hey, let's just try to understand each other a little bit better. We're not that different. I would argue we're not different at all. Our problems are the same. So.
Yeah, that's a great message. When I went digging through your Instagram posts, I noticed there were a lot of posts with your father and your grandmother and her sausage parties, which I loved. And like you mentioned, you're Italian. And I also watched one of your Yas Fest stand-up shows where you talk about your last name, meaning like peace pigeon.
That's exactly
that was hilarious.
Thank you.
So, yeah. And so your parents are, you mentioned, weren't exactly incredibly supportive in the beginning. So are there like any specific experiences surrounding your sexuality with your family that you like weave into comedy?
It's not that they weren't immediately supportive. It was, I mean, obviously it's like growing up, whether you're told something explicitly or not, like you can kind of like read the room. And I think that's like honestly a skill that makes me incredible at comedy. It's like, oh, I can tell how people are feeling just by walking into a room. And sometimes it's like, I'm gonna go, the energy in here is bad. So it's like having my parents only know what they know, which is both frustrating and a relief sometimes to be like, I don't know what I'm expecting here. You're trying your best, and that's gonna have to be okay. So I didn't really have too many like early experiences where they weren't supportive, but it was like a really big like ramp up to like finally come out to them, because I was just like, I am not 100% sure how this will go. And it ended up going, as far as like coming out stories go, it's as good as I could have hoped. On that spectrum. But I take that experience of how I even came out to them. I didn't formally like sit them down to come out to them until I was like in my mid 20s. And I did it in a panic. And so I've like wrote a whole essay about it. I try to weave it into more stand-up of just, yeah, there's nothing quite like coming out to your parents, because your sister brings home the dumbest man you've ever met in your life. And you're like, oh, this is allowed in the house? Then okay. no. This poor boy has bleached his hair so much, his brain is like, he carries it in a bag. So like, let's, okay, if this is acceptable, then I can bring home a dog. And like, that's not really, like, I would love a dog, but it's just like, okay, I'm making this a bigger deal than I think they will make a bigger deal. So, wow, that answer really went off the rails. I'm on the wrong coast mentally. but yeah, so like I have like taken all of those like experiences of and try to find ways to, yeah, play with it, process it. Like a huge part of like making comedy out of anything, even a little bit difficult, is to like try to understand like, wait, why did that happen? How do I feel about that? And I find that, dealing with like my more conservative upbringing is actually incredibly useful for making comedy. Does that answer the question? I'm not sure where I went.
Yeah, you're good. Okay. That was great. I tying on to that, I also read your an open letter to people who call me sir on the McSweeney's website, and I loved it, first of all. And you basically take something, you know, uncomfortable, like being misgendered because of your appearance, and then turn it into something about the level of respect corresponding with certain words. So hey man versus excuse me sir. But then it takes like a more serious turn about the power disparity and privilege in our society. So you mentioned this a little bit, but how do you like take something serious as this, something that means like so much to you, and weave in comedy and sarcasm through it? And like, how long does it take to really dig through yourself and your emotions to be so vulnerable and, you know, lay it into something like very structured like this piece?
Yeah, that's a great question. It feels like it really varies. It's like, okay, how much is this thing affecting me? And I didn't realize I had comedy to make of this experience until I couldn't stop talking about it. And then it was a little bit like, okay, she doth protest too much. There's something there. What is this like triggering in me? It started as a stand-up bit. Very much like, okay, I get misgendered kind of where you'd expect. It's like where people barely look at your face. So it's like very easy to make like a judgment, or like quick, like, okay, here are the three pieces of information I need: hair length, clothes, bad posture. And it's like, oh, that's a man. And it's like, oh, no, I wish. I'd be in the other bathroom line. It'd be so much shorter. It kind of was born stand up because that just felt like the easiest way to like kind of process it and like start talking about it. It really started just probably complaining to like my girlfriend at the time, to just be like, oh, I feel like I can't go to Chipotle anymore. It's like they're always like, excuse me, sir. It's like, I just want a salad. How about we don't call me anything? Like, that would be great. And so that's kind of like where it started. And then, yeah, realized I was probably talking about it a lot. Tried it first as stand up. And I think it still sometimes like lives in my stand up set. But it's not as big of a deal to me now, which is also like really a really cool thing about like processing things through comedy, to be like, oh, I actually don't need to talk about this anymore. I got out of this what I needed. I pay my therapist a lot of money as well. So it's like, maybe only she needs to hear about it. And I don't have to hold an audience hostage to what's going on in my life. So it lived as stand up for a little bit. And the more I was performing it, the more I realized, oh, I think actually there's a version of this that I can write that has like a slightly different thread through it, which was more of like this like privilege and, okay, there's a power displacement when I'm called sir. It's almost like somebody else has lost his like power. So like, how do we get this back to like the right home? And it is just like very, it feels disruptive to like a hierarchy in a way. At least that's like what the written piece kind of found. And yeah, it took a while to get from like lived experience, because it was just bothering me and I couldn't figure out why. And then as I started doing it as stand-up, I was like, oh, it's because if you're gonna be perceived in the world, your hope is that it's how you perceive yourself. And there is something so jarring to me, even now. I mean, I identify as non-binary, there's still something that if I'm addressed as sir, or somebody uses he, him pronouns for me, I'm like, close, but still not correct. So I'd actually prefer if you didn't. I have a joke now that's like, I use they, them pronouns sometimes, because most days I do identify as a woman, but there are other days where I just kind of, I feel like a cloud. And like, that's like a real nice in between. And that's relatively new. So who knows, that might displace the sir discourse in my stand-up. I think it really is, it's just kind of like an internal like thermometer of like, okay, am I ready to talk about this in a funny way at all? And then like the humor really just comes from like, what's the thing? Comedy is tragedy plus time. So it's like anything that feels like a big thing, it feels silly to call it a tragedy. It's like, oh no. Somebody tried to address me respectfully, but they guessed wrong. I guess the real tragedy was the time my actual doctor did it. And it's like, okay. I am gonna need you to go back to school for just a little bit longer. We gotta let this cook. I need you to learn how to read a chart. So I think that's like really what birthed the stand-up bit. The comedy really just comes from having a little bit of time with anything. And it's easier to see it as like an outsider, and it like you have like a little bit more distance from it. And it's like, all right, if I watched this happen, how would I describe this? Like, what do I think the funniest parts of this are? So there is a little bit of separation and I guess dissociation to process it as both a lived experience and like put that away. And then it's like, okay, I know there's like a comedy nugget in this. What is that? And like, look at it more as like a piece on the page. It's always hard to tell where life ends and the art starts, and then where the art has ended and life starts again. So it just kind of, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
That's great. Yeah. Oh man, the secondhand embarrassment that I'm feeling for that doctor.
I was like super, super sick. So like, I do the hard part of like trying so hard to like understand people. It's like, I understood why it happened, but that doesn't make it okay for me. So I was like, the appointment will be over really soon. But he just kept referring to me as like he to a really sweet guy who was making like the biggest eyes every time he heard the word he. It was like we were in a cartoon together, and I was like, are you gonna tell him? You're sitting by the chart. Oh, you're gonna make me tell him. Okay, that sounds right. I am the woman here. Okay, I'll do it. And then just like squeaked out, I'm a woman. And I was like, oh, I've never felt more embarrassed for both of us. But we're bonded forever now.
So that was a lot, but you know, it's not like, so it's not like exactly like, you know, this set, very systematic process that you go through to, you know, come up with jokes and stuff. Yeah. But is there like, I don't know, maybe with you or like your other, you know, comedian friends, is there some sort of like kind of this basic thing that you run through of coming up with a joke? And obviously it's different for everybody, but sure, like the most common thing when trying to take something and turn it into something funny.
I know it does seem like everybody kind of has their own system, and I'm sure there are like many different ways to do comedy. There has to be, it's very subjective. So obviously the process would be different. But often what feels right for me is, I don't write stand up every day. I write a bunch of different things. So it's like I'm never writing specifically like one-off jokes or always trying to like work on a comedy set. But like my process generally is when I'm trying to write something new, at least, I like to just kind of like catalog moments in my life, or like things that really the best place to start when you're trying to like write comedy is like, what do you care about? Like, what makes you feel something? And it can make you feel anyway. There's like no wrong emotion to follow, really. It's like apathy is usually like the death bell of comedy, because it's like, well, if you don't care about it, how is an audience going to care about it? So it's like, all right, what's something that makes me really happy? Angelina Jolie. What's something that makes me really angry? That doctor at CityMD. It's like, what are things that upset me? Just general inequality. It's hard to make funny, but it's, I like to keep like a running Google Doc of just things that I feel any kind of passion about. And so, yeah, it's kind of like the easiest way to set myself up for success when I'm writing is always having like a little note on my phone going, or like having a little notebook. That way I can keep track of like even tiny ideas, so that when it is time to sit down and do the writing, I have some place to start from. Yeah, there's like, I don't know if there's a better system. I'm sure there is. I would love to hear about it, but it seems like everybody kind of like has their own process. And I don't know, like, I think like Seinfeld like is like notorious for like keeps a calendar and like crosses off every day that he writes, and like just like never wanted a break in like the X's off the days, so writes every day. I wish I was that diligent. I try to write something every day, but often what I've written is a to-do list where the first item is write a to-do list, so I have something to cross off. It's cheating. But yeah, I don't know. I think like really the best place to start often is like, what do you care about? Because I feel like that's really the only place you can speak authentically or with like any authority. My comedy is often never a generalization, I say as a generalization. but like I don't know how comedians write jokes where it's like, here's the thing about, and then insert like topic, and it's like, how can you say that? How do you know? That's your observation. Tell me how it affects you. That I would love to know. Yeah, so that's usually that's where I write from. It's like, it's very me looking out. It's mostly me looking in, but sometimes I look out. But yeah, that's, I don't know. The shortest answer is no, I don't have a good process.
Yeah, okay, there we go.
We were both trying to figure that one out together.
Yeah. Okay, but no, that was good. That was good. My mind is a little blank now. I'm trying to process all that.
Welcome to my world.
So about like this field, right? A comedian. So your identity, like we talked about, is, you know, obviously this advantage that you have in your career, but being a part of like this minority group, like you said, a non-binary person, and, you know, lesbian. And so this certainly has its disadvantages sometimes. So how did you like kickstart your career in like a field dominated by straight white men?
Yeah, you could argue I'm still trying to kickstart my career. It's definitely not the easiest place to not be a straight cis white man, but there are way harder places. So I always acknowledge my privilege as sometimes a white passing man. I wonder if there's somebody being like, I gave her an opportunity. I thought that was a dude. and it's like, I snuck in. and now I'm going to kick the door open for people who should be sharing their stories. Because if I hear one more story about, oh man, I went on this date and this girl was like this. And it's like, shut up. Actually, just shut up. I want to know what she thought of the date. Actually, how about you stop telling me about your dates? It's like, I just, there's more life to live. Yeah, it's definitely, again, I will acknowledge my privilege. It's been a pretty clear path. I decided I wanted to like pursue comedy. I mean, probably early is when I like admitted it to myself, but I didn't do anything about it until I was like in my mid to late 20s. And I kind of followed the model set by white men, where it's like, okay, I started taking writing classes at a comedy theater that no longer operates out of New York. That is a really privileged thing to do because they were really expensive classes. I think I just kind of kept following that like ladder of, all right, well, once you take the classes, you should submit to be on like a house team, writing sketches. That's like my background was sketch comedy writing. It still is, I guess. My background hasn't changed. I just don't do it as much. and so, yeah, I kind of like tried to follow these paths set by men in the field. And it just happened to work out that, again, as a white woman at the time, like I was following the same steps, and it didn't feel as challenging. Again, back to the therapist I pay a lot of money, she likes to tell me that I discredit myself a lot, where I'm like, it actually wasn't that hard, I guess. And she's like, you probably worked way harder than you think you did. And it's like, yeah, that's probably true. Yeah, but I was being lazy about it. It's like, she's like, okay, and maybe we stop doing that. So maybe there were more like obstacles, and I mean, the way I've operated often in my life is, it feels to me like if you're gonna do something, like try to be exceptional at it, because it, at least with comedy, it feels like a thing I owe other people, where it's like, all right, if I'm gonna tell my story and try to like connect to other people, why not do the best job I possibly can? And I realize that's not really a straight white man thing to do. They're like, good enough. No, some of them are fine. We can name them on one hand. I just kind of like kept following this like sketch comedy track, and that got me to a certain level. And then, I found that a friend of mine was like, oh, there's no like queer sketch comedy at the theater. Why don't we do that? And I was like, oh yeah, why don't we do that? So we had like a LGBTQ sketch comedy show that ran at the theater. And it was like the first of its kind. And like, that felt crazy to say in like 2019. It's like, wait, just now this is starting? I think, again, I'm sure there were way more doors closed for me than I thought, but I pushed my way through the ones that were cracked open. And like I said, my true mission in life is the second I get a foot in the door, I'm ripping it off the hinges so whoever wants to come in can come in. That's like my overarching goal. It's like, okay, a little bit enough of what's been. Let's try something new. What's the worst that can happen? Something better? Okay. Okay. I'll take that risk.
It's Queer Tiger Beat, right?
That was one of the shows. Yeah. That was a stand-up show that I started with my writing partner at the time. And then it moved to my former partner. It was, again, like, it in the space, it felt like there weren't a lot of queer stand-up shows that gave a space to women, or, you know, just like women identifying comedians. So I don't know. I guess I'm not thwarted by a closed door, because I'm like, that's all right. I know how to use a hammer. I'll just build one. It's like, how hard could it be? It's probably pretty hard. I just don't notice.
So, like, when you were younger, you didn't really have any, you know, female or non-binary comedians that you looked up to? It was, like, mostly mainstream stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, like, my biggest probably stand-up influence for a while was Ellen. And it's kind of crazy to watch that unfold. But I think she's, like, an exceptional writer. And obviously has, like, a real charm of how she performs. And isn't that, like, a beautiful display of equality, where it's like, hey, we can have villains too. We actually don't all have to be good. Oh boy. Yeah, she was, like, a big influence. I don't know. I guess I also spent a lot of time as a Louis fan. So, I mean, that was a huge, probably, influence, and in also how I wrote comedy. And yeah, I think it's just, like, learning to separate, not even learning how to, learning that you can't really separate the art from the artist. And when a comedian tells you what they're like, you should believe them. In their comedy. Yeah, I mean, I watched, like, a bunch of stand-up, watched a bunch of stand-up, but as far as, like, queer or non-binary, like, stand-up comedians, I think I didn't even know that could exist, so I didn't even know, like, where to look for it. And so I think that's, like, what's the most beautiful thing about Instagram making things more accessible. TikTok is perfect. I love the work of Gen Z. I think we'll dominate the world. We'll save it. That's where all of my hope is. Just like this, like, more, way more authentic presentation of self. And I think it's, like, a great way to connect. And I sound like a dinosaur.
You don't have to flatter Gen Z. I'm not sure about saving the world or anything.
Maybe not saving it, but, like, having absolutely no fear of, like, burning it down, to be like, well, this isn't working. And it's like, good, you're right. Thank you for, like, being so angry you do something about it. So.
Yeah, okay. So more on, like, you mentioned writing and how, you know, Ellen, you think it's, like, you know, she's a great writer. And then there's like a performer and then a writer, right? So usually when people think of comedy, they think something like spontaneous, right? But writing is often the opposite. It's very deliberate. So how do you find the balance between spontaneous, like in a group of people, versus deliberate, like when writing a piece for The New Yorker?
Sure. It's really, it feels like a little bit of a brain vacation when you're just trying to, like, connect with, like, your friends, and, like, you happen to say something really funny, or I guess not happen at this point. It's just, like, hardwired, where you're like, all right, I will be the funny one here. This is my cat who has had a New Yorker piece written about him, probably for that reason.
It's, pictures of my cats. Yeah, I've seen it. It's great.
From my cat. That was, like, a collaboration with my mentee at the time. She asked how my cat was surviving the very early days of the pandemic, and I was like, oh, he's pretty much built for this, he loves it. And I was like, okay, I'll be right back. I've got some writing to do. Which is like often how a lot of my written pieces start. They start in conversation. So it's like very easy to say something off the cuff and then kind of like, I don't know, every so often I say something and then like I see it, like I see like a visual of it and I'm like, okay, actually there's something more to that than just how it contributed to this conversation. And yeah, there is obviously a very like deliberate process of like, okay, how does this live on the page? Or I mean, stand up, at least all of my, most of my stand up, I would say 99% of my stand up is written. And that is like a very deliberate process. And the trick is to rehearse it well enough that you think I'm coming up with it every time I do it. and so, yeah, that's the peek behind that curtain. There's something really satisfying about saying something funny in conversation because it's confirmation that your brain is working. And you're like, oh, that's right. All right. I can connect things. I can say something. And then there is like that instant gratification of a response. But with writing, yeah, it's a much lonelier journey usually because it's just me with my ideas. I try to send things off to friends and people I trust for feedback. But I often have no patience. So when I think something's done, I submit it and often get the feedback of like, oh, we like this, but here's what we'd prefer. And it's like, oh, I should have waited for the notes back from my friends. But yeah, I don't know. It feels, I can't remember the last time I wrote something that didn't go through 9 drafts. The writing process is just getting really comfortable with rewriting. Every draft of something, I don't know, it's easier to find like another layer of the humor or something that feels truer. Every piece is kind of different. I don't think, I think we've established I don't have a set process. But I mean, what have I worked on recently? I just submitted like a new piece to the New Yorker that is actually a resubmission of something I wrote last year that she was like, oh, I really like this, but we got inundated with pieces that are like about this topic. Try again next year. And I was like, thank you for something to look forward to. So I reread the piece like 2 weeks ago. And punched up a couple jokes. And I was like, oh, actually, it's nice to have sat on this for a year and resubmitted and we'll find out. I can't wait for her to be like, please do not send this back to me next year. This is the end of the line for this piece. but yeah, it's, I don't know. It's kind of like, they do feel like two very different skills, but maybe they're not. They're just separate processes.
All right, this one's like more of just, I just came up with it because of something you said.
Right.
And you come up with 9 drafts, right? Does it like, do your jokes when you read through them, do they ever get like boring or annoying?
All the time.
Yeah.
All the time. Where it's like, by the time you get to the end of it, you're like, okay, I think I wrote a phone book. Like, where were the jokes supposed to be? That was always the case when I was like writing like live sketch for like theater, where it's like you'd get to the third rehearsal and like, at least for me, maybe it was different for somebody else, but I was like, we don't even have to do my sketch in the show, it's clearly not funny. And it's like, oh no, it's because we've heard the jokes 1,000,000 times. The surprise is gone, and that's like a lot of comedy is like the surprise. So yeah, by the time you get to like draft 8 or 9, you're like, I don't know what this is. I need somebody else to read this because I'm sick of them and I'm changing them because I'm sick of them, but I'm pretty sure they're good as is. It's like, just stop touching.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned earlier about like a little bit about Instagram. And this year has been like very different, right? Everything's gone virtual. And I noticed that you're pretty active on Twitter and, often tweet out one-liners and stuff. So what's the role of social media in your life, both in terms of your career and then personal creative freedom?
Great question. I feel like I've recently had like kind of like a recalibration of how I use social media. For a while, Twitter was like the go-to place that like it seemed like people were getting comedy jobs, so it just felt like a necessary tool where you're like, okay, I guess I have to do this thing, but it's become such like a toxic place. And it's like such like an echo chamber where I don't really engage with anything, and I really just write like jokes as they come to me. It feels truly like a rough draft folder that I often then take, and I'm like, okay, are there any jokes here that I think fit into any of like the longer pieces I'm writing, or do any of the jokes here have like legs that I can perform them either in stand up or I've unfortunately, no, not unfortunately, I do like it. I've somehow become very active on TikTok, an app that I think is not for me, but I love it. A lot of times what I write on Twitter is like a scratch pad of something I eventually try to perform on TikTok as just like two camera stand up kind of. Yeah, that's kind of how those function in my life. And then I do use Instagram also as like a tool of like, okay, here's kind of how I'm keeping track of like career milestones. Like, here's this thing I want to share. But within one of my New Year's resolutions was to like live more authentically and like share things and like feel like more aligned with like the people in my life. So I have been trying to use like a less polished version of Instagram where it's like, hey, this is actually what's happening in my life. I've like definitely posted about like I had like a mental breakdown last year or like bouts of depression. It's like, and those ironically are the posts that get the most like engagement of a word I hate that I just used, but it's like, oh, that's like the human aspect that is frequently missing from social media. Because, or at least not Facebook. I try not to use Facebook. I have been selling furniture on Facebook Marketplace. That's like about because I have to move very shortly. So that's like the extent of my Facebook. And every so often my mom is like, did you see what I posted on Facebook? And I'm like, absolutely not, Luann. No, I did not. And I refuse. You can tell me about it, but I stopped listening the second you said Facebook. But on Instagram, like I feel like it is like a very like filtered, very polished, like isn't my life so beautifully curated? And I look at my grid sometimes and I'm like, oh boy, who is this person? This is like a character, it feels like I've created. Yeah, I am trying to like move more towards like, all right, if I'm gonna use this and it's not just for my career, I want it to be a better reflection of myself. And the way to do that is to, yeah, not always post when you're your happiest or when you're like, I'm equally happy and sad. It's like, that's just the reality of, I think, being a human being. So why not share those moments? Yeah, for career stuff, they feel like a necessary evil, but every so often there's like that beautiful silver lining of like actual human connection. So I'm kind of letting that guide my usage lately.
Yeah, I completely agree, especially with the social media stuff. I have Instagram too, and I use it very frequently, but like all my posts are just really good angled pictures of me, and it's just, happy comments and captions and stuff, but it's completely like, different from my real life. And
Right.
on
You're
the
like, why would I mention this thing that's happening? It's like, oh, that thing that you spend most of your time thinking about because it's like a big stress or whatever. It's like, yeah, I guarantee if you post about that, oh, 100 people will be like, yeah, me too. And that feels so validating and like, oh, okay, great. This doesn't 100% have to be divisive.
Mm-hmm. But then there's also the memes.
You gotta have the memes.
And while we're talking about, you know, virtual platforms, I was really curious. This year, have you ever had to do like some sort of comedy through Zoom?
Yeah, I've done not that many shows because it's so bizarre to me. It's bizarre to most people, but it feels so jarring to me to perform to a computer and not have any part of like the human experience. And that feels like an essential component to stand-up comedy. So yeah, I think I did like maybe 3 or 4 shows and I was like, you know what? I'll just wait. I'll focus on other kinds of comedy. I will just wait until it feels safe to do this again in person.
Yeah, that was my next question. I was gonna ask how it's different through a screen, you know, versus in real life.
It's really, it feels really dystopian. It feels like an episode of Black Mirror a little bit, to be like, oh, this is what this could be. Like never in a comedy club again, which is like fine. I feel like those places, some of them are like disgusting. But it's just like, there's a version of reality where you never perform to a live audience again, or like you just like don't get a live audience reaction. It's like, all right, well then I guess I would stop doing comedy that way because that's not good enough.
Yeah, it's like you mentioned, it's all about that connection.
Yeah.
So about Girls Right Now, you're a mentor at Girls Right Now, this nonprofit organization that provides writing opportunities to underserved girls and gender expansive youth. And I'm also a part of this program. My main focus is poetry and prose. Right. And what like pod, I believe, what like group are you part of?
So I had been doing, I think it's branded as like 360 or W360, mm-hmm. whatever. I had been doing that for years. This past year, I was like, I don't feel adequate enough to take on a mentee. So I did Writing Works for the year. And that was great because I ended up working with, I think, the same girl a couple times. And it was like nice to like work on like one-off pieces. But yeah, I needed to like fill my own cup first.
But you've worked with mentees before.
Yeah. I've had two mentees that have both graduated and gone off to college. And sometimes I like to say I check in on them, but they mostly check in on me. So.
What did you like usually work on with them?
My first mentee, Mariah, loved sci-fi and social commentary, like essay writing. And so we worked on a lot of that, where I was always like, there literally was never a session where like she didn't blow my face off with something that I was like, how were you writing this? How? Like, where is this coming from? This is like, we need to get this published tomorrow. I was like, I wish I knew somebody. And so she's in college now, probably like blowing somebody else's face off. My second mentee, Jada, loved writing, kind of like memoir pieces. And so, my experience with Girls Right Now has always been like true bafflement at how clear voices can be, because that was not my experience when I was in high school. It's been like truly a joy to like just watch the talent just skyrocket through the program. I'm like, how? At 17, I was like downloading I don't know, like the TV shows that I was like, I shouldn't be watching this.
Oh, so when you were younger, you were not, you know, you didn't have many opportunities, such as the ones provided by girls right now, to really get your voice out.
Yeah, I think it was kind of a little, A, not having the opportunities, but B, like not really thinking I deserved them. Like, it's like, oh, what do I have to say? Just like a different sense of like, okay, like I love girls right now because not only are the mentees clearly giving themselves permission to say like, oh, I should have this support because I have something to say, but it's like the whole program gives permission to say, go ahead, tell your story. Like, here are all the tools, like, here's what you need. And I think that was like a little bit what felt like was missing when I was that age. And I, again, didn't think too much of it, like probably didn't realize it was missing. So like, I wouldn't have sought out those opportunities, but
yeah. So why did you, like, when and why did you choose to become a mentor or, you know, later work in Writing Works?
Yeah. My first experience with Girls Right Now was like six or seven years ago. I was writing comedy at the comedy theater and got an email from the artistic director who said, there's this organization, Girls Right Now, they're doing a sketch comedy writing workshop and they want like additional mentors to just kind of like guide through the workshop. And I was like, that sounds incredible. So I volunteered and spent a lovely afternoon in like the Girls Right Now offices, like writing sketch or like helping girls write sketch comedy. And after the workshop was over, the program director or coordinator at the time was there. And I was like, how do I do this more? She was like, oh yeah, no, you should apply to be a mentor. So I did, and you know, was accepted and spent 3 years with my first mentee and then 2 years with my second mentee. I think that math is right. It might not be. I'm like, they're both in their 20s. I'm like, oh, I lost track of time. Yeah, and then not only have I worked as a mentor, but I work on the anthology committee. And that's been like really lovely. The launch is, I keep getting the notifications that it, the Girls Right Now Live is in what, 45 minutes?
Yeah.
So watch that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's great. The book came out, I'm pretty sure it was published like today, yeah. Right? Yes, yeah, that's wonderful.
It's the launch party. Hell yeah. Mm-hmm.
So other than for comedy, do you, like you mentioned how you help one of your mentees with sci-fi writing and then another one with memoir. Do you personally write anything like that, you know, just other than comedy?
Yeah. I started writing poetry. I went through a really bad breakup. And poetry was the first thing I turned to. So I started writing poetry. And it's kind of funny poetry. Like, it's hard to remove that part of like how I write. And so there's like a little bit of humor in all of it. I hope nobody ever sees it. Watch, somebody tricks me into publishing it. And I recently started, I realized I had like a bunch of like beautiful stationery and a bunch of stamps because I'm trying to save the post office by myself, I guess. And so I put out a call on Instagram. I was like, does anybody want like a poem or like a letter? I would be happy to like mail you something. And a bunch of people said yes. And I was like, okay, that's a lot of things I have to write now. but I'm like excited. I also like writing I've been writing like TV pilots, which is still like comedy, but it's much longer form. And so, yeah, I don't know. I do every so often try to pitch like essays around, but those are harder for me to write because they require really knowing what I want to say, and that's really not my speed, as you can tell from this interview. I really start talking and I hope I land somewhere.
No, it works. It works.
Okay, good. But yeah, I kind of like writing a little bit of everything. I started writing a book proposal a couple years ago for what would essentially be like a humorous book, but that feels different than what I've been writing regularly. So hopefully I finish that soon. I'm looking at the to-do list that just says book proposal. So yeah, I don't know. It's nice to explore all genres because there's, I don't know, so much to learn from all of them.
I'm just really waiting for someone to leak your poetry.
Oh God.
It'll happen.
That would be my nightmare.
So are you like currently working on anything new or any new upcoming projects that you'd like to share or are excited about?
Yeah, sure. I actually haven't worked on any of my own projects in about a month. I was working a job, which feels crazy to say because I've been formally unemployed for most of the pandemic because it's turns out there's not a market for a bunch of comedy when it's not essential. I just wrapped an MTV TV and movie awards writing gig. It was like their reality show, their first reality show awards. And it was so stupid fun. But I am like looking forward to like diving back into like my own stuff. Earlier today I had a meeting with a friend. We're putting together like a game show podcast where we're both the hosts, but the secret is we both want to play. So I'm really excited about that. One of the things I'm working on, I'm really trying to like branch out and not just like write for print, which is a lot of my experience. I'm working on another project that is like, I have a friend who has a very similar upbringing to mine, like also queer, also Italian American, but he's from the New Jersey of the East, Long Island. Trying to put together like a documentary series of, Italian culture seems pretty gay, but then it got here and it's really straight. What happened? So it's just kind of like exploring those questions. But again, he's another comedian, so it'll be pretty funny. I don't know. I feel like I'm always working on 100 things at the same time. I've got my Angelina Jolie show. Performing it on her actual birthday, June 4th. I know we both know that. I don't know. It's kind of a little bit of everything and it's really fun.
That's great. You're always busy, perpetually busy.
Yeah, and at some point I'll explore why I need to keep myself this busy.
Yeah. I have one last question for you, and that is, what piece of advice do you have for, you know, any queer woman, you know, non-binary individual, any girls who want to pursue comedy, but maybe like, you know, a little scared of setting their foot out there?
Yeah. I think that's a great ask. My advice is just do it. Think about everything in the world that is just fine and know that you will be better than that eventually. Like, there are so many just fine things in the world, and I feel like all of my favorite great things are usually from women. So it's like the only thing often that feels like it's holding you back is you, because your expectations are so high. And that's what's going to make the thing so great, because like you hold yourself to a much higher bar. So just do it and like let it be okay that it's not amazing right away. It will be. It's just a matter of time. Your story is worth sharing. Your perspective is worth sharing. I want to hear it for sure. So just do it.
All right. That's great. Thank you. Just do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Nike Palumbo.
Nike, right? yeah.